Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. For the last three summers, Iowa State University has offered an innovative Teaching and Learning Iowa History series. It's an online course that teachers and educators can enroll in for credit, but it's also a course that other interested Iowans can take for free. Students have learned about the civil rights movement in Iowa and anti-Black racism in the state, and this year a new course will focus on American Indians of Iowa. The course is the brainchild of Katie Swalwell, Associate Professor of Education at Iowa State University, and she is with us today. Hello, Katie.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Great. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Sebastian Braun is also with us. He's one of the designers of the new course and Director of American Indian Studies at Iowa State University. Hello, Sebastian.
Hi. I'm good. Glad to be here.
Great. Thank you so much. And Katie, give us a little bit of an overview. We've talked about the course for the last few summers. You're offering it again. And again, this is an opportunity for anybody who just is interested in Iowa history, interested in social justice issues, to take a free course. Tell me about the idea for this new offering.
Sure. So the last couple of summers, the topic that we've been offering that really looks at the history of the civil rights movement in Iowa and struggles against anti-Black racism has been very popular. We've had hundreds of community members, dozens of teachers, university students taking that class. So we're still offering that content again this summer as well, but we've added this additional strand per the request of students and I think just general interest in the community as activism around Indigenous issues gets more attention in the media, that people were really requesting a similar class but focused on Iowa Indians, in particular issues of sovereignty as it relates to the state, which I know Sebastian can talk more about. And then we also include modules not just about land issues and sovereignty issues, but about issues related to identity, representation, and activism, both historical and current, that has some really incredible Iowa connections. And the last part of the class really focuses on the K-12 curriculum and teaching methods and how we should translate these histories and these stories into schools and classrooms so that young people in Iowa can learn this history as well.
And this, from your perspective, this is a pretty big gap that we have in that K-12 curriculum.
It is a big gap. A couple of years ago, there was a study done by Sarah Shear, Ryan Knowles, Tony Castro, and Greg Soder that looked at all 50 states and wanted to understand how the standards represented Indigenous people. And I don't know if you want to guess where Iowa ended up on their list, but we were actually second to last in terms of states that had specific attention paid in the standards to Indigenous people. So that was something else that inspired me, was clearly there's a need in the state for more attention to these issues. We do have new standards now that I think are improving our standing across the country. So the new Iowa Core for Social Studies at every single grade level K-12 requires Iowa history to be taught. And there is specific mention to Indigenous issues related to land and sovereignty and removal and tribal governance, like current civics issues. So I think that's definitely an improvement. But I'm also concerned that a lot of teachers don't have the content knowledge necessarily to make those standards come alive for their kids in their classrooms.
Absolutely. Well, and when you started looking into this history, you felt like you had a pretty big gap, right?
Yes, I know. I keep being embarrassed when I look into these histories as someone who grew up in Iowa and as someone who loves history. Just like with the class focused on the civil rights movement, as I started investigating more, I was just really amazed by not just the importance to our local communities, but the national significance that some of this history has had and just really what we should be celebrating and honoring and acknowledging that's happened in our state. So yeah, I personally love learning this history as much as I love teaching it.
Well, and Sebastian, you are relatively new to the state of Iowa, but let's keep talking about gaps. When you got to Iowa State University, you were pretty shocked that there wasn't a course about the Native people of Iowa at the university, right?
Yeah, that's right. There was no course specifically on Native peoples of Iowa. And so we filled this gap since. And I've been teaching that course for the past year. And what I see is exactly what Katie said. There, you know, when I ask my students, like, what do you know about Native peoples in Iowa? a good portion of them are surprised that there are Native people in Iowa. And then others, you know about the Meskwaki and maybe even the Meskwaki settlement. And then there are many people who just are really surprised that that Iowa has anything to do with American Indians.
Well, and you, of course, coming from North Dakota, the Iowa history wasn't something that you were particularly familiar with. So you had to do quite a bit of research to teach that course.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was pretty much all new to me. but, I mean, luckily I could draw from some, you know, general backgrounds and then filling in the details. But, I mean, I'm still learning. I'm still discovering new things almost every day. And working with Katie on this course definitely has again, like, brought to light my own ignorance on things. And I'm hoping that I can fill those gaps myself.
Well, and the course is not necessarily designed to really teach all of the students this history, but to prepare teachers to share this history with their students, right?
That's right. I think this is definitely not, you know, the course that you take and then you know everything that there's to know about Native peoples in Iowa. But I think what Katie and I want to do is to start a conversation, a larger conversation that I think is necessary. And it's not just Iowa, and there are states and provinces that have, you know, implemented curricula that really deal with Native issues K-12, and so there are these models out there, but there are plenty of states where this has not happened yet. But I think it's important to start this larger conversation of thinking about Native issues and just including American Indian history and culture and contemporary issues in our awareness.
Well, and including it, you know, when I think about how I learned when I was growing up, I mean, it was very much from the perspective of the settlers, of the conquerors, you know, including Native American history in a different way than we've included it in the past, right?
That's true. And I mean, actually, if I may say so, you know, there's this idea, right, that this was conquest. And actually, then people are surprised, you know, because they think it was conquest, that they're surprised that Native people are sovereign nations, that they are still sovereign nations. And so that awareness, I think we have to raise this awareness of how this taking over of land, this appropriation of land happened, but also raise awareness that this was not, you know, total conquest, that Native nations are sovereign nations today, and that we have to acknowledge that. Right. And understand this.
If I could add there too, Charity, the study I mentioned before, also looking at standards across the country, showed that the vast majority of states only include Native people in the curriculum in a pre-1900 context. So your experience growing up is not unusual at all, that school children tend to learn about American Indians pre-1900, and then that's it. So the National Council of Social Studies just came out this year with a really fantastic kind of call to action. And we're really fortunate in Iowa that two of the nine people who worked on that document are Iowans. One is Leah Slick Driscoll, an amazing teacher at the Meskwaki Settlement School, and the other is Stephanie Wager, who's in charge of social studies at the Department of Ed. And that call to action, some of the things that they're recommending that schools and districts across the country do includes teaching current events and movements, committing to responsible representation, teaching about sovereignty, as Sebastian mentioned, and tribal governance in civics classes, and affirming Indigenous knowledge. So to your point, Charity, that you learned it from the perspective of settlers, the National Council of Social Studies is calling on teachers to really shift that perspective to include and affirm Indigenous perspectives as well. So that document, I think, is providing some inspiration and guidance. And it's exciting to me that two of the leaders of that happen to be in Iowa as well.
It is exciting. And Sebastian, if you will, I would love to do just a little bit of, I guess, Native People of Iowa 101. All right. So we have this name. We have the name Iowa. Yeah. It's something that we've all lived with. There are some rumors about what it means, but yeah, it also gives a little bit of information about the people who lived here before the settlers came. So tell me about who lived here.
Well, I mean, the name, right? And a lot of people I learned after I came here think that means the beautiful land between two rivers or something like that, right? I mean, really, the name comes from the Iowa tribe. And the Iowa, you know, nation lived in this area, and pretty much in all of what today is the state of Iowa was their territory until, you know, the very, very late 18th century, early 19th century. And then within about 40 years, the whole social and cultural and political landscape changed, right? And so today the Iowa tribe is one part lives on a reservation on the Nebraska-Kansas border, and the other one lives in Oklahoma. And that's part of this removal of these efforts to remove Native peoples from this territory before Iowa became a state.
And the Iowa, they moved through Iowa, they lived in Iowa. Was this part of their territory, or was this their primary territory?
This was their primary territory. I'm sure you'll hear later on from the Office of State Archaeology that, you know, so the Iowa came out of this culture that we call Oneota, which was, you know, centered around Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, kind of like in this area, and had developed a quite complex and advanced, you know, if you want to use those words, society. And out of that, that culture, society came the Iowa, and then other peoples like the Omaha and other people. So the Iowa have a long connection to this land, very long connection to this land.
Well, we are going to take a short break. We will be back in just a few minutes. With me right now, Sebastian Braun. He's one of the teachers, one of the designers of the new course about American Indians of Iowa for the Teaching and Learning Iowa History series that will be taught this summer, available to teachers for credit, available to anyone who wants to learn more about Iowa history. Sebastian Braun is Director of American Indian Studies at Iowa State University. Katie Swalwell is also here, Associate Professor of Education at Iowa State University, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Right now we're talking about the Teaching and Learning Iowa History Series. This is a course that's been taught for the last few summers, offering teachers an opportunity to take this online course for credit, offering the general public to take this course for free to find out more about Iowa history. Students have learned about the civil rights movement in Iowa and anti-Black racism in the state. And this year, a new course has been added that focuses on American Indians of Iowa. And the course starts on June 1st. You can still register. You can check out my Twitter feed if you'd like to find out more information on how to do that at Charity Nebbe. And with me is Katie Swalwell, Associate Professor of Education at Iowa State University. Sebastian Braun, one of the designers of this course and Director of American Indian Studies at Iowa State University. And just before the break, Sebastian, you were giving us a little bit of history. We were talking about the Iowa in Iowa. What other tribes, what other nations were part of this land in Iowa?
Well, so there were quite a few. Traditionally, I think especially the Oto and the Missouria lived in southwestern and more southern Iowa, had territory there. There were the Dakota who had territory in northern Iowa. And then there were others. The Meskwaki came in probably in the mid-1700s or so. And then there were others that came through Iowa, visited Iowa, were removed to Iowa, and then removed from Iowa on, like in the next couple hundred years.
Well, and as, of course, the Native people were moved further west, a lot of them did come through the state of Iowa. How did that impact the Iowa and other people who were already here?
Yeah, especially the Iowa, as far as I understand it, you know, kind of lost their power and their hold over their territory as these other people came in. When Native peoples in general controlled a territory, it was theirs. Then when other people come in, had needs for resources, they had to ask permission to harvest those resources, to be in that territory for a while. And if that request was made in a respectful way, in a proper way, then it was you know, usually fulfilled. And so as the Iowa had to, you know, fulfill these requests more and more, they kind of were driven out of the consciousness of especially the American government, who started to deal primarily with the so-called Sac and Fox, of which the Meskwaki then became a part. They're the Fox part, usually as portrayed in American history.
Well, and that there is definitely some confusion as we learn about people with the names that they went by and gave themselves, and then the names that settlers gave them. That can create quite a bit of confusion for us.
Yeah, I mean, so the Meskwaki were really an independent nation who were in a, you know, alliances, who had alliances with the Sac or the Sauk, and for the American government, it was just unimportant that these were two independent nations. And so the American government really just combined those two really tribes, the independent tribes, together and just dealt with the Sac and Fox. And so that has led to a lot of confusion and a lot of difficulties for the Meskwaki, even once they had come back to Iowa.
So in this course, Katie, maybe you can give us a little bit of an overview. What are some of the important things that you feel teachers in Iowa and those who are interested in this history need to learn about to get a broader understanding?
Right. I think a lot of what Sebastian has been sharing is great, kind of providing that basic information. If we're teaching a course about Iowa Indians, you know, who are we talking about? Who are those nations? So laying out some of that early history, but per the request of Indigenous people and the National Council of Social Studies, we really try to pull that history through the 19th century into the 20th century and even connect it to current events today. So one of the case studies that we look at, we have several different case studies, but one that we look at is the Meskwaki settlement, how that got established, all of the long struggles and activism that went around with that. It's a very complicated and fascinating story, and really trying to understand why that's a special story, why that's interesting, and why that's important for non-Native people to understand that story as well. So we have a lot of case studies and stories that relate specifically to issues of sovereignty and land, questions of land use. And then we also have a lot of stories, articles, podcasts, clips of videos, all sorts of ways to learn about, identity issues like assimilation, acculturation. We have people reading about and thinking about issues related to something like school mascots. We talk about activism that's been happening in Iowa for, you know, the 20th century and even into the 21st century that has to do with issues of representation, assimilation, appropriation. So those are the stories that I think I'm most excited to share, are the ones that identify and really highlight more modern issues and understand their historical roots, because these are the issues that people are grappling with today and really not wanting to reinforce the idea that Native American history is only pre-1900
right,
and only in relation to settlers, that there's just so much more that's important to know. And I know you've shared some of those stories on your program before. Like one example is the story of Maria Pearson, a Native American woman who had been living in Ames for a long, long time, and through her husband's work at the Department of Transportation, uncovered remains of Native people and settlers when they were building a highway. And Maria worked with Governor Ray and with others to really push against how the remains of Native people were treated very differently and disrespectfully relative to the settlers' remains. And that ended up becoming national legislation.
Where the settlers were reburied, exhumed and reburied. And
exactly.
The Native American remains were sent to the Office of the State Archaeologist for
exactly.
study.
Another study that we have people learning about, another story, is about Sergeant John Rice, who was a Native man who had fought for the U.S. military and served in the Korean War, I think, and was buried in Sioux City. And after he was buried, the city realized that he was Native and the cemetery was only for white people. And so they wanted to unbury him, I guess, disinter him. And it caused a firestorm of debate that was around issues of race and identity and segregation and discrimination. So that was in the 1950s. President Eisenhower got involved. So there are these stories that, you know, when you learn about issues related to sovereignty, related to identity, you know, especially for non-Native people, I think it's easy to think, well, those are all resolved and those were in the long, long past. But actually, a lot of these conflicts and debates and tensions exist today and have carried through today. And as Sebastian mentioned, even recognizing that these are sovereign nations still, for non-Native people especially, this is important to recognize as a civics issue, as a democratic issue. So we're really excited, I think, to share some of those stories that might surprise some people to learn about, not just pre-settlement, which I think is very important to understand, but also to understand all of those interactions and issues that arise in those 200 years since.
I'm talking with Katie Swalwell, Associate Professor of Education at Iowa State University, and Sebastian Braun. He is Director of American Indian Studies at Iowa State University. They are the course instructors for the summer series Teaching and Learning Iowa History, with a new course being offered about American Indians of Iowa this summer. You're welcome to join our conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. And Jeremy is on the line in Ames, and he has a question for us. Hi, Jeremy. Jeremy, are you there? I think we've lost Jeremy, but I do want to relay his question. His question was, why is it important and what does it mean to an Iowan living in this state today to understand Native history? Why is this an important part of our history for all of us living in 2018 to understand? Sebastian?
So I think I have two answers. One delves back to what Katie just said, and I don't know if many people in Iowa remember this, but Blackbird Bend, I'm sure lots of people in Western Iowa know about this story, where the Omaha and the Winnebago tribes laid claim to lands that were on the eastern side of the Missouri River that were originally part of their reservations because the river had shifted. And that led to a long legal battle between farmers on one side, the state of Iowa on the other side, and the Omaha and the Winnebago reservations on the third side. And I think this is one of these issues that where farmers had just assumed that this was, you know, nobody's land, and that therefore it was theirs. And then they discovered to their surprise that there were still sovereign Native nations who actually rightfully believed that, no, it was theirs. And if people are not aware of these issues, they can be really surprised. The other thing that I want to say to that is, you know, so this spring when I taught American Indians of Iowa, I actually asked my students, like, why it would be important, why it would be not important for them to learn something about Indians of Iowa. And the first thing that somebody said was, it's not important because this is not our heritage. And I said, well, what is your heritage then, right? And the students were at first surprised that anybody would ask them that. Then they couldn't answer it. And then when they answered, somebody said, I'm Irish. And I said, well, okay, so if it's important to know something about your heritage, what do you know about Irish history and prehistory? And she said, nothing. And I said, well, why not? And she said, well, I grew up in Iowa. And so I think it is important to understand the whole history of the land that we all, you know, currently live on, because that is part of our heritage. And if we artificially cut off that history at the time when somebody new appears on this land, then we do not understand the land itself, our relationship to the land, We do not understand how we established ourselves on this land. And I think that leads to a truncated understanding of ourselves, our identity, our history, and of our relationship to the land.
Well, and something that's very interesting about living in Iowa, and living anywhere in the United States, is our use of Native American names, Native American words. There's one. I grew up in Black Hawk County, and Chief Black Hawk's name is everywhere in the Midwest, and an image, you know, we certainly see as a school mascot, as a team mascot, or the name of a business, Black Hawk Car Wash, that kind of thing. You know, this is the name of a man that we see everywhere, although most of us don't think very much about who that actually represents. Let's just take a few minutes to talk about Black Hawk, because that's a name we all interact with.
Right. I think there's, you know, and well, we can start talking about why he's so, you know, omnipresent in our imagination, right? And it's just because of the Black Hawk War, which is, unfortunately, when we remember American Indians in history, we often remember only these events that were violent and that were, you know, we remember the war leaders. And so our imagination of American Indian history then revolves around wars and conflict and so on. But, you know, if you ask people like how important was Black Hawk, in the history of the Sauk nation, I don't know if he was the most important person, you know. So the fact that we actually have Black Hawk as this omnipresent remembrance in Iowan and Midwestern, as you said, society is one of these signs that maybe we should teach more about Native past and Native presence and Native futures in this area, I think.
What does it mean to a Native person today to see these names everywhere that again, we take for granted, or you know, Katie mentioned mascots, which a lot of people have very strong feelings about.
I mean, I'm not Native, so I don't want to speak to, you know, to the Native perspective. I was at the University of North Dakota, who had the Fighting Sioux as their name for a long time. And so, you know, from my experience, some Native people, you know, are strongly opposed to it. Some Native people are you know, for support it. And most Native people have their own problems to deal with and you know, feel maybe this is what Americans do that is silly, but they have other real issues that they want to deal with. So I think there are these three opinions out there.
When you teach your students about Native sovereignty, what are they most surprised to learn? I think it's a concept that a lot of us, maybe we don't understand it, but we know that it's it's out there. So what are they surprised to learn?
I think first they're surprised to learn that Native peoples are actually sovereign, and that has real legal implications, that they are sovereign, that they have governments, courts, that there are therefore laws. There's a federal Indian law as a specific field of law in the United States. And so that's the first surprise. And the second surprise is to learn that all the consequences that flow from that we often don't think about. How do American Indians own land? What is the legal status of, what does it mean legally to be an American Indian in the United States? Basically, you are a ward to the government. What kind of powers do tribes have? What kind of powers do they not have? Those are all issues that I think students are very surprised to learn about, including sometimes Native students who also, you know, have not really sometimes a good understanding of these issues and how they are existent in our contemporary American society.
Katie, this is an online course. How does it run through the summer? I mean, it runs through the month of June. How do people interact and learn about this material?
Yeah, each of the modules that we've put together have a ton of different materials that you can explore and interact with. And we have a suggested timeline for people to work through. And there are discussion threads, you know, ways to communicate with others who are taking the class, as well as with myself and Sebastian. And so we have a suggested timeline for people to work through, but it's really designed to be self-paced. And we have multiple rabbit holes people can go down if they're particularly passionate about a specific issue. So we've really tried to just create as accessible a space as possible to explore these issues. I appreciate Jeremy's question about why this is important, and I think Sebastian really nailed it. You know, I've had students as well. When I invite Leah Slick Driscoll, a Meskwaki woman who's a teacher at the Settlement School, to come speak to our future teachers, one student I had grew up in Tema, and she stayed long after to talk to Leah and was really frustrated with the fact that she'd grown up in Tema and knew nothing about the Meskwaki settlement. So I think we have an obligation to understand our neighbors and to understand ourselves. So I'm really excited that, you know, people have access to this online for free if they want to take advantage of that.
All right, stay with us. We're going to be back in just a moment. We're going to talk about some other ways to learn about Native American history in Iowa throughout the summer months and really any time. With me, Katie Swalwell, and Sebastian Braun from Iowa State University. We've been talking about the Teaching and Learning Iowa History series. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we've been talking about the Teaching and Learning Iowa History series. There's a new course being offered as part of the series this summer, focusing on American Indians of Iowa. And you can find out more about the course online. You can register for it online. It takes place through the month of June. It's an online course that's available to teachers for credit. It's available to the general public, if you're interested, for free, to find out a lot more about the history of the state of Iowa. With me, Katie Swalwell, Associate Professor of Education at Iowa State University, Sebastian Braun, Director of American Indian Studies at Iowa State University. And we're going to broaden the conversation now to talk about some other ways that Iowans can learn and interact with Native history in the state. Elizabeth Reitz is here. She is Director of Strategic Initiatives at the University of Iowa Office of the State Archaeologist. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you for being here today.
Thanks.
And now I want to start with kind of a rundown. You know, during the summer, a lot of us like to get out and explore the state, take little weekend trips. Let's talk about some of the places that people can go, because we were just talking, Sebastian and I were talking about the Native people that lived in the state that we know about. We have sites in Iowa that go back beyond what we know,
right?
Prehistoric sites. So let's talk about some of the places where we can go to really at least touch this Native history. The number one place, of course, is Effigy Mounds.
Right. Effigy Mounds is by far one of my most favorite places in Iowa. The far northeast corner of Iowa, right on the Mississippi River, there is a really wonderful interpretive center, visitor center there, where visitors can learn from rangers, do ranger programs, and see artifacts from the cultures that built the Effigy Mounds. And of course, you can do a lot of hiking to see the over 200 mounds that are in this national monument.
And just very briefly, what do we actually know about the people who built those mounds?
Approximately, they built them about 1,000 years ago, and they are descendants of people we know today, including the Ho-Chunk in Wisconsin. And the shapes of the mounds range from bears to thunderbirds to hawks and eagles. There's all sorts of amazing things that you can see there.
So a great place to go with family, go for a hike, go again and again, right?
Yes.
But this summer, you're focusing quite a bit of your education on petroglyphs, which is something else that people can see in Iowa. What are petroglyphs?
Petroglyphs are essentially rock carvings, and they're found all over the world on rock faces, boulders. Essentially, people pecked images into rocks, including figures like animals and humans and other geometric shapes. And there are also pictographs, another type of rock art, which is essentially painted on, so pigment mixed with animal fat. And these are basically images that tell a story of the past.
And are there still pictographs that exist in Iowa?
There are not as many pictographs as there are petroglyphs.
Okay.
The paint is not as, it doesn't stick around as much.
For thousands of years.
For thousands of years. It does in other places, but we know that we have a lot more petroglyphs here in Iowa carved into rock.
So where can you go to see petroglyphs?
A lot of them are actually on private property. They're pretty sacred sites, and they're also really fragile. So it's challenging to go and see some petroglyphs in Iowa, although there are occasionally field trips that the Iowa Archaeological Society runs, and the Northwest chapter this summer is taking a group of people to Jeffers Petroglyphs in Minnesota, which is just north of the Spirit Lake or Okoboji area. That'll be on August 8th, and people can sign up to go see this wonderful park that has over 5,000 petroglyphs carved into rock.
So you can go and see them and learn what we do know about the people who created them. And Project AWARE, which is something we've talked about on the show in the past, which is a program through the DNR to clean up a waterway. But the Office of the State Archaeology has been part of that program doing some education along the way. This is going to be one of your focuses at Project AWARE this summer too, right?
Yeah, Project AWARE is going to be on the Maquoketa River in the Driftless area. And Northeast Iowa is known for having a lot of petroglyphs and rock art. So we're going to touch on that in some formal programs, talk about what rock art is and what some symbols potentially mean or what we know from them. And we'll also do a make and take activity with kids where they can sort of create their own symbols, such as petroglyphs, and have a little fun object to take away.
So how do you, tell me about the project that you do with kids. How does that work?
We keep it simple. I use a lot of air-dried clay and stamps where I've made some shapes of animals and other figures. And also you can use tools from nature to etch into the clay. And we definitely encourage kids not to necessarily imitate the images that they're seeing from the past, but to come up with images that express events and stories in their own lives, because that's what petroglyphs really are. They're a record of culturally and socially important events and stories. And they said, you know, I'm here and this is the story I want to tell. So we encourage kids to do that as well.
And if you're doing trying to do a pictograph project, you also have a way to make natural paints that is not a traditional way to make natural paints.
Right.
So how do you do it?
It's pretty fun. So traditionally, animal fat was used and mixed with pigment, but we can use Crisco now. And I think I use a lot more Crisco in art than I do in cooking, but you can make pigments with all sorts of materials from nature, including crushed up rock like hematite and ochre. Charcoal is an easy one, of course. You can mix charcoal with just enough Crisco to make it the consistency of a finger paint. And you can also find flowers and other objects in nature to experiment and crush up with and see if you get any pigment or color from those.
All right. So, and how long does a Crisco painting last?
You know, I'm not quite sure. I don't have a lot of that on my refrigerator.
All right. We'll have to give it a try at home and see how it works. You have some other education opportunities for kids, specifically for kids this summer. You're going to be involved in College for Kids, which is a program up in Cedar Rapids at Coe College.
Right. Cherie Howery Arts from the Office of the State Archaeologist has been doing this wonderful program for years, and her Archaeology of Iowa class almost always fills up. It's going to be from June 18th to the 29th, and there are a few more spots that you can register for through the Grantwood AEA.
All right, and also the Sanford Museum in Cherokee has a field school this summer. Tell me about that.
They do. They're running their field school right now, and they're having a day that's open to the public on June 6th, although they do want you to let them know today if you're going to join.
All right, today is your deadline. We still have Katie Swalwell, Associate Professor of Education at Iowa State University, with us, Sebastian Braun, Director of American Indian Studies at Iowa State University, both still with us this hour. And Katie, it's fun to listen to the ideas that Elizabeth is talking about. It sounds like some of these might be a really great dovetail well with what teachers and educators might be learning in your course this summer. Is Katie still there?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Sorry about that. I'm really excited to hear all of those ideas, especially the ones that engage young children. And something I'm just really struck by is how much outreach and how many public services these different state agencies and, you know, Iowa State, University of Iowa are doing to reach out, to share this history with the general public and to engage especially young people. I think that's really exciting and also something really worth supporting.
And as you were saying earlier, though, you know, it's easy to, when we focus on the history of American Indians, it's really easy to focus on this pre-1900 history. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking to teachers about bringing this education into the classroom. How do you balance that?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of sharing stories to give them a little bit more confidence and content knowledge about more modern history and contemporary issues, and really helping supply them with those stories. So certainly, you know, understanding the prehistoric history, it's fascinating and it's important, and that pre-1900 history. But I think in some ways I tend to maybe even lean a bit heavier on the more modern history and contemporary issues, because that tends to be what people leave out or what they don't talk about. You know, the prehistoric history and early history, sometimes it's easier for people, especially for non-native people, to talk about those issues because it's such old history and any controversies are long gone. And sometimes I think teachers are nervous about including attention to issues that haven't really yet been fully resolved, or there might be lots of different perspectives and debates. But as a democracy and preparing kids to enter that, where there is nothing but debate and you know, controversy and people needing to deliberate and discuss, those issues are actually really important to share with kids and tend to be what engages them and what hooks them, so that you can then tie in, keep stepping backwards from present day to understand the roots of some of these issues that we're grappling with.
Well, and is there fear? Have you talked to teachers about this? Because, again, I mean, historically speaking, the history of American Indian people has mm-hmm. been taught so poorly mm-hmm. in our schools. Do you have teachers who are kind of afraid to touch the subject because they're afraid of doing it wrong?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's not just people I've talked to. There's research about this, actually, that shows that teachers, especially non-native teachers, are very nervous. And I think they're some of that is understandable, for sure. Sebastian and I were just talking about this yesterday, planning the class, that one of the most important things to do is to just keep learning more content yourself and to seek out Native people and Native stories to learn from and to listen to. You know, there are some really kind of common sense things that once you think about it, you think, oh, yeah, that's actually pretty problematic. Like a common activity in elementary schools is to have kids invent Native names for each other and to make little headdresses with a feather. You know, if you think about it, that's just nothing but stereotypes. That's really all that is. There's no actual content being taught. There's no specific nation. And it's kind of disrespectful even to invent names or invent dances. So some of this, I think, is just giving them space to really think through, yeah, maybe I'm trying to be inclusive, but it's actually not really accomplishing the aims that I set out to. So having more content knowledge, having more confidence about that, having connections to Native people and to resources that are really good, I think all of that helps teachers feel better about including this in their classrooms and really creating things that engage their students and help them learn about these histories.
Yeah, Elizabeth, I'm sure that's something that you've struggled with the Office of the State Archaeologist as well. I mean, what do you do to prepare yourself so that when you share this history with students, when they go on field trips or you do a class at Co-College or something like that, that you can do this in a respectful way?
Right. Katie is exactly right. It's all about making connections with Native peoples and resources created by Native peoples. And at the Office of the State Archaeologist, we have an Indian Advisory Council that advises on burial issues and other topics. But we have a history of strong relations with Iowa's Indigenous communities. And so a lot of the programs that we create and give that talk about Native peoples, we're often asking advice from our Meskwaki friends, our Ho-Chunk friends, our Iowa friends, and hearing their perspectives so we can do our best to communicate that and point people to the right resources when they want to learn more.
Sebastian, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Maybe I can just say, you know, a shout out to the Office of State Archaeology. I think it has been over the past 40, 50 years really a model for how to do this with Native people.
Thank you so much.
Now, when people are going to be interacting with your course material over the summer, Katie, you've had people take these courses over the last few summers. You've had people come back again. How are you seeing the impact of this information getting transferred into the classroom?
Yeah, I think it's really exciting. There are definitely examples of curriculum that teachers have created, activities they've created. That's something that we're really trying to do more and help with more. One of the biggest takeaways, I think, from the first couple of summers was having people who took the course who worked for Department of Human Services or the juvenile court system, people in totally different fields across the state, invite me then after they experience the class to come and share some of this information with their colleagues to help inform the practices of all of those social services. And so that's something that's really exciting to me, is people taking the class and figuring out how to share these stories more widely. So I've presented at different churches and organizations and businesses, of people really wanting to understand this history, how it connects to their lives, and really to try to make the community a better, more equitable, more inclusive space. So some of the quote curriculum that's coming out isn't necessarily lesson plans for fourth grade, although that is happening. I think when the general public takes the class, that it can really take on a life of its own and become something that they really want to share with other people. And that's exciting, that however these stories are shared, whether it is through lesson plans or whether it's through documentary projects or whether it's through a speaker series, just really having a way for people in the state to figure out how to celebrate this history, how to make it more public and better understood.
Now, I mentioned that teachers can take the course for credit. The general public can still enroll in the course, mm-hmm. and it starts on June 1st. But you also have a face-to-face event mm-hmm. that is part of the course, a required part if somebody's taking it for credit. But tell me about the face-to-face event.
Yeah, we're excited about this, too. It's going to be on June 15th in Des Moines, and we've invited several people to participate as speakers and leading small workshops. The keynote speaker is going to be Sarah Scheer. She is a professor at Penn State and one of the leading scholars around Indigenous education, Indigenous issues in the curriculum in K-12 schools. So she was one of the people who put together this position statement, really calling on schools across the country to do a better job. She also conducted the study, looking at state standards across every state. She's been involved in creating curriculum that connects Native people to departments of education to create really wonderful, rich, meaningful curriculum for teachers to use. So to have a leading expert like that come and share is just going to be really exciting. So we're looking forward to that.
And are members of the public invited to that as well, or just people who are enrolled?
Absolutely. No, everyone is welcome to come. We want to make this as accessible as possible. I take the land-grant mission of Iowa State very, very seriously. And I think part of that is just making this as accessible as possible. So yes, we will have information on our website about that day. And the general public is welcome to come to that. And really anyone, even if you don't start right on June 1st, if you decide that you want to pick up the class in the middle of June or even towards the end, you're more than welcome to do that. We're happy to have anyone whenever they can come.
And the course also comes with a long reading list, so you can take this this education on for the rest of the year or maybe a few years as
well. Oh, for sure. There we have none of it's required. You know, the reading list, we have a ton of additional resources, but Lance Foster, for instance, has a wonderful book about the Indians of Iowa. And there's just lots of wonderful resources that we're just trying to gather together in one space as like a central hub for people who want to learn more. So one of the common requests I get after the class ends and people no longer have access to that course is a list of those resources. So we put those online as well so people can access those afterwards.
All right. Well, Katie Swalwell, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much.
Katie Swalwell, Associate Professor of Education at Iowa State University. Sebastian Braun, thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to say, if people have other questions, look me up and ask me.
All right. Sebastian Braun, Director of American Indian Studies at Iowa State University. Again, the course is the Teaching and Learning Iowa History Series. If you put that into a search engine, you will find it. You can also find it on my Twitter feed as well. And Elizabeth Reitz, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Elizabeth Reitz is Director of Strategic Initiatives at the University of Iowa Office of the State Archaeologist. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.